As part of early intervention, occupational therapy may be a recommended form of treatment if your child has sensory-related needs. Join me as I chat with Green Moa, a Hmong occupational therapist from the Twin Cities, about her experience working with Hmong families and how OT can help your child. Hello and welcome to the Let's Talk About Autism in Hmonglish podcast. On today's episode, I'm so happy to have with me occupational therapist, my Green Moa, but she's told us just to call her Green. So we've known her for about 2 years now. And, you know, I actually don't know too many Hmong occupational therapists, but Green showed up and she's just been amazing. And I think for me as a BCBA, for her to say, hey, I kind of know a little bit about ABA, and then hearing all her strategies, I'm like, this is my jam. Let's be friends. And so she's been with us on our town halls with Thao, and I've invited her here today to share more about what is occupational therapy. Welcome to the podcast, Green.
Thanks, Tia, for having me as your guest. Absolutely. I'm so excited.
You know, I never knew anything about the occupational therapy field or therapy. And I first learned about it in, I think, before I was a freshman in college. And when I heard occupational therapy, okay, so occupational, that's halu, right? Work. So do you help people who are going to work to find work? That was my initial understanding, right? I had no idea. Mm-hmm. So, and also, please feel free to use Hmong, interject Hmonglish as much as you'd like. But can you please tell me and our listeners, what is occupational therapy and why would an individual be recommended to seek out occupational therapy?
Yeah, so just a little bit background. I went to St. Catherine University in St. Paul, mm-hmm. Minnesota, and this was back in 2012. So we didn't really know, I didn't know a whole lot about what OT was. So in school, I'm like, whoa, don't even know what this is. And this is about 11 years ago, so think mm-hmm. about it now.
Yeah.
But I learned that occupational therapy, we help people get back to what they need to do. So in plain language, I kind of tell people like, oh, you know, this morning you probably showered, brushed your teeth, brushed your hair, combed your hair, put on mm-hmm. clothes, hopefully. And that's what we help people with. With kids, pediatrics, it's just pretty much the same thing, but in the school, I work in the schools. This is my eighth year. So it's getting them regulated, helping them with fine motor skills, helping them with what they need to do to function and participate and be successful in the classroom setting. And then, in the clinic setting, it's working on that whole picture. So we focus on sensory processing. We focus on like dressing, feeding. We do like the whole gamut in the clinic setting. But that's just a little bit of OT. Going back to the question, what was the question again?
Yeah. So why would an individual be recommended to seek out occupational therapy? Like, I mean, do they, I know you work in the school setting, and this is actually my next question, and we'll kind of go between the two. You work primarily with just kiddos with autism or kiddos who have an IEP that requires OT. So there's that setting, but also like outside of the school system, right? Why would someone get OT as an outpatient therapy?
Yeah, so in the clinic setting, which I worked briefly, usually kids get a doctor's referral. So the doctor's like, hey, you know, I'm noticing this or that. Usually parents who have, if their child is already diagnosed with like autism or ADHD, then parents are a little bit more apt to be like, okay, you know, I know they need speech or OT, or they've heard of that. Yeah, so it's usually we get it from like the doctor's order, so like the hospital or like the outpatient clinic there. And then we see them at the clinic, and then we would evaluate them. So if they're not getting like a nutritional intake, or they're picky eaters, or they're really rigid, or like they or having a hard time putting on clothes or shoes or regulating their body or there. We also focus on behaviors too, like are they getting the right sensory input that their body needs, things like that. So mostly from doctor's referral, and sometimes it's like through word of mouth too. They're like, hey, this clinic is really good, or I think a lot of, I don't know too much, but I think a lot of Hmong parents are like, they don't really know where to start, because I think it's just like information overload, because there's like the county and there's like caddy waiver, because all of these things cost money. So I think it gets to be very overwhelming. So we don't see them until like they kind of have, as far as their financial needs met first, and then they go out to seek the resources and then the therapists that they like and need. And it also depends on like location too.
So if OT is recommended kind of as a prescription for those early learners, you know, like initially they always say, oh, here's speech and OT before we get you on that wait list for ABA. So you see those younger kiddos, those under three kiddos, right? Hmong parents, they're like, first of all, they're already astounded at speech. They're like, why are you going to teach my kid how to talk? They're just not ready. But we're going, oh, there's a lot of reasons why. And then they go, OT, occupational therapy. And just like you said, when they hear occupation list, how, oh, right? And it's confusing when they hear that word occupation. So how would you explain to a young or even a brand new green, no pun intended, a green couple who is like green to therapy, who's like, what is occupational therapy going to help my 2 or 3 year old with, you know, dumb mom parents with it? Oh gosh, pencil, you know, write their name and then learn, you know, or not on but then like, how do you share with them? Like, well, actually, you know, due to the diagnosis, it is harder, and this is what I can do to help.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I used to work at a Hmong school in St. Paul.
Oh
So
yeah.
during I yeah, so during IEP meetings,
Cool.
I just would put it in plain language, and I consulted with like my Hmong translator to Hmong
Okay.
interpreter, just to be like, hey, is this good? Is this good enough? But I would just tell parents like, hey, you know, like so and so nulu. So and I would say like like same age peers. And then, yeah, I try to just keep it very simple. I don't even get into the sensory stuff. And then, if when like my aunties, like or Dalo Nuna, like today, I went to the funeral, my Dalo was like, go Ochi. And I was like, oh, go Halunda, I think it's, I wish there was a better way of saying it. And I'm sure there is. I think I'm just so used to saying that to keep it simple. I'm like, oh, you know, go hello, Jacob, the go hello, the minua, Seon Khan. And they're like, oh, that's good for you, you know? So I kind of just leave it simple. So yeah, I try to keep it very plain English and Hmong. But yeah, I think most parents, since because they don't understand a lot of things, I think they're just very receptive to like whatever help they can get. Like even for sped, they're like, oh, chulika, like they don't know like the nitty-gritty, like reading, writing, math goal and all that, but they're just like, oh, thanks for helping. Yeah, I think they're just very grateful for having a team of professionals slash people to help their child. But yeah, I think it's all around. I think they understand and they just want the help that their child needs.
So how do you, I mean, recommendations will eventually fade out, right? Once they get older and their body is able to self-regulate. So what if a client is like, you know, in school, and this is actually one of my last questions, but I'm gonna go ahead and bring it up. You know, y'all, OT hours are very minimal, right? Like in school, it's like, gosh, maybe 15 minutes twice a week. That's only 30 minutes a week for a kiddo. How do you guys determine, you know, okay, actually, we've been doing this for a few years. We recommend outpatient, you know, OT after school and having those conversations with our Hmong parents, like, are they receptive? Are they like, okay, they go and seek it? Or are they like, you know, that's just not important to us. You know, we feel like our kid is getting enough sensory input. How do you navigate those conversations?
Yeah, so not just with Hmong parents, but by law, we cannot, in the schools, we can't make a recommendation like, hey, Tia, I think your kid needs OT. Like, we can't say that because you could come back around and be like, oh, well, Green the OT from Minnesota says my kid needs therapy. So it's more of like a liability and financial means. So we can't recommend it. So it's kind of hard because like OT in the school is like, it's free by the government and parents don't have to take their kids to therapy. So I feel like it's like a luxury service. So it could be kind of skewed, but usually it's like upon graduate, I call it graduation from OT. Like, it's a good thing. Like, we want them to learn and carry over these skills. You know, usually by fourth or fifth grade, that's when I'm like, okay, what do we got to do? Because by fourth, fifth grade, before they go to middle school, like, you don't want OT. Like, they've between pre-K, so like three all the way up to like 12, that's like learning where the brain is changing. Like, I can't change you how you hold your pencil since you've been learning it for like the past 6-7 years. Like, I can't change that because your body or the child's mind has already, that habit has already been there. So usually about fourth, fifth grade, I'm like, okay, well, what do we do? You know, like, do we go to typing? Do we think of other modifications and adaptations so that you can be independent? Because when you go to middle school, you have like six classes or four classes with like 80 minute long classes. So it's like less is more, and we want them to be independent. So, but I think average, my caseload is from kindergarten to about third grade. And I see them 3 times, 20 minutes a month. So once a week for 20 minutes. And I don't see, I only see one kid right now twice a week because she's very, very, very low. Other than that, there's like special cases where I do 2 times a week, but rarely, very rarely, we don't see that kids, we don't pull them out the out of the class as much because it's called like a LRE, the least restrictive environment. Yes. Each state has it differently, but there's only X amount of minutes where you're not supposed to pull a kid out of the classroom. Like, they need to also get their academic stuff in the classroom.
Yeah.
So yeah, a little bit of loopholes to go through, but graduation is good. And I think, yeah, I think a lot of parents get so scared because sometimes I think they like the title of it, like, it's OT. And I think I get it, like, scheduling is hard, taking them to clinic is hard, but I think therapy in the school is different from therapy in the clinic, so like the medical and educational, but that's another topic too. But yeah, I think it's just like, as far as school setting, less is more. And I, most of like my Hmong parents who I've had in the past, like, they're like, yeah, whatever, whatever you think. So I'm like, thank you for trusting me.
You know, and OT is one of those things, like, once you understand how much it does help you with that sensory processing, right? Or that sensory input need. I think even like myself as an adult, like, sometimes I'm like, I need OT to help me figure out how to get that, you know, sensory input that I'm like, my body's craving and needing it. So like, I'll ask my husband, I'm like, can you just like squeeze me, you know? Or I think last Christmas, he bought me like one of those little bean bags. It's not a bean bag. I'm not a bean bag, like a sleeping sack or something, right? You get into it and it just like puts you in like a cocoon, you know, to help you fall asleep quicker. So like, would you say that adults would also benefit from OT?
Yeah, so I think I'm a sensory kid myself. I think everyone has like their own little sensory quirk, I call it. But I think they can still function as adults. I think it's just not as visible. Like, people have fidgets like at work, but it's, I feel like it's more accepted now, because I think people are just learning about, I think they have a sense of awareness of what their body needs. And so I think fidgets has become like a thing. And so people think it's like cool to have this or that. So I think as adults, it's more like, you know, your body more, whereas kids and teenagers, like, they're not aware of what they need yet, but their body is craving it. So I think adults have their ways of seeking movement. And it doesn't have to be a sensory thing. It's kind of like, oh, I don't want to sit too long. I want to take a walk. Like that right. is, you're seeking movement, but you just don't know that. Right. Or it's like, oh, you know, I have like these really cool Bose headphones because it's noise canceling, but it's, it looks cool. So it's, I feel like it's, our society has adapted things to make it look cool and accepted, and people just don't notice it. So I think it's just hidden for most people.
I went to a conference and, like, you know, I'm one of those people where I go to every table and I get the swag, right? I'm like, ooh, this toy looks cool. This thing looks cool. And I brought it, like, two bags full back. And at the time, my program assistant, he was helping me go through it. He goes, ooh, can I keep this? And it was one of those little cubes with where each side has a different thing on it, you know? And it wasn't until he told me, like, month later, he goes, hey, you remember that cube thing you gave me? It has helped me so much to calm down in the last few months. Just, I have it in my pocket. Whenever I start fidgeting, I just, you know, have it in my pocket, and it's helped so much. And I thought, really, that is great. You know, I never even, never even occurred to me, even being in the field, that, you know, y'all, right, the adults would be the ones who would, like, benefit more from these, or benefit as well. So, you know, I think you make a great point about that. You know, we are able to, like, understand, and with that executive functioning going, I need this, how do I get it? Okay, got it, done, right? For, but for our kids, that's where you come in. So when would you, you said you work K through third grade, right? Currently.
Yeah, so my caseload lies mostly in elementary, but I can do K through 12.
Oh, okay.
I can, yeah.
Yeah, so like, is treatment planning different for like your little guys versus your teens, or versus an adult, like your approach to how you would treat?
I really like working with schools because you could be working with little ones and then boom, you're at a middle school, so you have to like switch to like your tone of voice, the way you act. Treatment planning is a little bit different. So for middle schoolers, I don't see them, so I work with them indirectly. That just means that I'm helping out the teacher, giving them materials, giving them tips and suggestions to help support the student, but I'm not seeing the student face to face. And then for elementary, like, we're working on those like early learning skills. So like self-reg, how do we use our words? How do we express how we feel instead of hitting others or getting frustrated and running out of the classroom? So I think for middle and high school, it's more like just monitoring, keeping tabs on them. And yeah, it's different, but it's cool. Cause like you're more like a consultant, like you're an expert in the middle and high school, which I love, cause you're supporting like the teachers and the paraprofessionals who work with the students. And then,
Yeah, so that's a great segue then. So do you work with other ABA professionals, like your BCBAs, or even you said you work with SPED teachers, SLPs, and if so, how does your role as an OT factor into that multidisciplinary team approach?
Yeah, so in a school setting, we don't have ABA because that's more medical out in the community. But as far as the team, we have, it's a big party, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
So we have like their school psych. So like in the medical setting, it's kind of like the doctor. Yes. In the educational setting, they're kind of like, I call them like, you know, they're a school psychologist. They help evaluate and diagnose like a school age label for this child. There's a speech therapist. There's an evaluator. So the person who does all the testing. There's the behavior specialist to provide input on the student's behaviors if they had any. There is the classroom teacher, the SPED teacher. Sometimes there's like an EL teacher there from working with the student before. And then extra specialists who come in is like the vision teacher. There's the deaf and hard of hearing teacher, or a DHH teacher. There's the physical impairment teacher, PI, physical therapist, but she's very, very hands-off. It's more like consulting, kind of like that expert I was saying. So it's a big team, and I'd say, like, if I see them, like, the specialist, like, we're all friends, like, oh, hey, how are you doing? So we kind of have shared the same students over the past 4 or 5 years. So we kind of, like, know each other, like, hey, this is what I need, or hey, what do you think about this? So, like, you can bounce ideas off of them too.
So then, and these are the individuals that are in your IEP meetings. That's a lot of people in one room.
Sorry, not IEP meetings. This is more like we call them PNC. It's a pupil needs committee. So it's when, yeah, this is like where we get our referrals that come in.
Oh, gotcha.
So they're like, okay, we're noticing Tia is, you know, she's wanting to always get up and walk around the classroom. She doesn't want to sit down. She's struggling
That's
in
true.
math, you know? So then we get like, that's how we get the referral. So we kind of sit down and be like, okay, what's going on? It kind of reminds me of like those interviewing questions, like in Law and Order, where you're in the police station and you're like, okay, what's going on? And you're kind of like talking.
Gotcha. So this is like the initial, things are coming through, and you're trying to figure out who is would be best needed, right, for this specific case. So then let's say you are you have figured, IEPs out. So at the IEP meetings, out of all those individuals that you listed, would you say like half of them typically end up on an IEP team?
Yeah, so depending on the students' need, it'd be like everyone. So that would be parents, child, sped teacher, and whatever services the child receives. So speech person would be there, OT, and I'd be there. But usually there's like four or five. And then we would need like an admin representative. So it could be like your principal,
Principal,
assistant principal, just to like make sure everyone's on the same page and stuff. They usually don't say anything. They just chime in about admin stuff, but they're kind of just there to just make sure everything's rolling good.
So you said that you used to work in a Hmong school and now you are no longer there, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so at this new school, and I say this with when I'm thinking about being culturally responsive, if you are the only Hmong provider in that room, do you feel like you have more of a responsibility to engage the Hmong parents and kind of let them know what this meeting is about or your role? And kind of, I'm sure they have an interpreter, but do you feel that, you're kind of like, you're the cultural responsive police and going, are we giving information to this family that allows them to understand what every entity is offering and why it's being recommended for their child?
Yeah, so usually there's always a Hmong interpreter, so I kind of let them do their thing so I don't overstep their boundaries. But I will introduce myself in Hmong. I will choose to speak in Hmong to the parent and then translate for like my white counterparts, just so that that way I'm personable with them and I'm inclusive to them too. Like I can also speak your language so they feel comfortable. And I've done that with some of my parents currently too. And I see them out in the community too. I'm like, hi. Like I'm not shy. I'm just like, hi, come and And they're like, yeah. So I feel like it's cool to like have that rapport with them.
Absolutely.
There was one time in a Google meeting for one of my middle school students. I guess the Hmong interpreter was not there. And we were And the sped teacher was kind of all over the place. So we had to wait like 10 minutes on the call. So I was like, you know what? I can interpret. Let's just do this meeting because aunt is waiting and this is not professional. So I will step in when I need to, but most of the time I'm kind of just there and then I'll speak in Hmong too. And then, yeah, I'll just translate with for my team. So kind of the opposite, but I think most of the time, yeah, I try to speak Hmong, like most of the time, if not all the time. And if they're not Hmong, that or if they don't speak Hmong right away, then I don't speak Hmong because I don't, yeah, because if they're already speaking English, like I'm not going to speak Hmong, obviously.
I love all the OTs I've ever worked with, but part of this is that we're always training, right? And in the OT field, there's you. You're the main spotlight, right? Like there's the occupational therapist. And then every now and then we'll see what we call the CODA, which is, remind me again, is it certifying occupational therapist assistant role, right?
Yeah.
Do you have a lot of CODAs that come through and do trainings with you, Green?
Got it. Yep, that's it. Usually in the schools, depending on the school district, we used to, but because I always tell people, like, CODAs are so fun. They get to do the fun part, and I have to do, like, all the meetings and all the paperwork.
I know.
So in the schools, they're not common just because there's so many things we have to do, like going to the meetings, filling out that paperwork, progress reports. But I think in my district, they used to have them, but then it just got a little bit more tedious. Mm-hmm. And budget stuff too. So I think, so in most school districts, they have an OTR, like a registered/licensed occupational therapist.
Okay.
Other places will have OTAs, but that's not super common depending on the state and city.
Okay. Is that the same thing as a CODA, the OTA?
Yeah. OTA, yes. CODA, okay. OTA. CODA. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm doing, you know, these spotlights on, careers in the field working with our individuals with autism. So I first did one with our speech pathologist, Miss Lou, and I think they also have assistants too that I trained under them, and with occupational therapists. That is also a master's level position, right? Mm-hmm. But then the CODAs is a undergraduate degree. Is that right? Or is it just a 2-year? I cannot remember.
I think it's a 2-year.
2-year? Okay.
If I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so any listeners out there, if you're like, if you hear all the stuff that Green's sharing, you're like, I could do that. I would love to do that, right? To help these kiddos with all these like skills and develop all these skills. Occupational therapy is definitely one to consider. In fact, I remember, again, from when I learned about it as a freshman in college, I was like, I would love to do that. But I feel like I'm already like little Lena, you know, like there's so many things I need to sign up for. So if I could ever go back and do it again, I would do the OT route. I'm so super excited to know you. Yeah. Well, let's see. We talked about the dosages and you told me that it's like most of your kiddos in school, you see them 20 minutes, 3 times a month. And I think what I hear in the outpatient clinics is that it's very minimal as well, you know. But like from your experience, like what is the most you've ever heard of a kiddo getting OT? Like,
definitely
like daily,
depends.
An hour, or
yeah, it depends on the setting. When I worked in the clinic, at most would be an hour. So daily? You would see them, yeah, daily. Not daily. Oh my god, my head would go crazy. So the most, the most would be 2 times a week for an hour.
Okay.
So I think an hour is too long. That's why I'm like, I can't do clinics. Some people can do the clinic, but I'm like, I can't. Because the kids, in my opinion, kids' attention span is like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and they have to like go on for a go noodle break or something. So imagine an hour.
I know.
But when I was in the clinic, I did a lot of, when I was in the clinic, I did like, 5 minutes of your activity. Okay, let's go to the gym. Okay, let's go back to the office. Mm-hmm. Okay, my activities. But it was a lot of like switching around, like preferred, non-preferred, preferred, non-preferred, and like incorporating that with play.
Yeah.
But in the clinic, it just got hard, like especially my friends who have behaviors. So it's like, imagine getting hit for like 8-30 minutes and you still have 20 more minutes to go. I'm like, I'm not about this life. I'm done. Or if like they cry and they have a tantrum and they're like in the hallway, like you have to sit with them until they calm down. And usually it's just you and the child, unless there's like a nearby therapist, but they're usually like with another patient. Mm-hmm. So in the schools, I really like, just because like there's like a team of support and people passing by.
Yeah.
Because you're in their natural environment.
Yeah. So currently your caseload at the school, what percentage of that would you say have a diagnosis of autism?
I can't tell you off the top of my head, but we have 2 classrooms that have autism and they have probably like 8 kids per class, so like 16-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then I have like higher functioning kids too. So I would, with my middle schooler, so I would say like 30. out 30%. Of like 30, yeah, like 30%.
Oh, wow, okay.
30, 40.
Mm-hmm. Which is a big chunk, really, out of, you know.
Yeah, but autism, it's like, it's hard to tell because, like, you have kids who have higher functioning autism, so then you're like, you kind of forget that they have autism because they don't have, like, your common symptoms of it. So I would say, like, 40-ish. Okay. But I've, like I said, I don't really remember because I don't look at them as their like symptoms. I'm just like, okay, you are you, and that's who you are. So we're gonna do this.
Yeah.
But I think 40-ish.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this podcast is for our Hmong listeners, and really, I mean, any listener, you know, mm-hmm. can learn anything about OT or autism from this podcast, and I hope that is the case. But I would like to end this, Green. I know you've been in the field for a while and you live in Minnesota, so you definitely have more Hmong clientele that I probably ever would have, you know, being in the South. So what is the message that you would leave this episode with for our Hmong listeners, our Hmong parents who are curious when they first hear the recommendation for OT, for occupational therapy? You know, and the importance of it. How would it shake their world? How would it, you know, make their lives easier, make their kiddos' lives easier? Like, what do you do that, you know, you would love for our Hmong listeners to understand about OT?
Yeah, so I think from my experience and, like, friends and family and, like, even my students' parents, I think everyone's very receptive to it and very open. I know there are some parents who they don't understand the word autism, especially like my newly arrived Hmong parents from Laos.
Okay.
I think they know that their child is different, but they don't really know the education of it. Like, what does that mean for your child? What does it mean when you go out in the community? But I would say just having them be like open-minded and just learn about their the child's diagnoses, autism or not. And then, yeah, I mean, most parents are like, most, if not all, Hmong parents are pretty receptive. They're like, okay, ready to go help. I'm ready to help my child. But I think there's also, I see that there's still some, like, I don't know, like, assumptions around it too. Like, oh, well, so-and-so is just like that. Let them be. But they're, like, crying. It's like, oh, I don't think they'd be crying a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just, like, being open-minded and just figuring out what your child needs. But I know that it's hard to even figure that out, too. Because I know, like, parents, I think Hmong parents are just, like, surviving. They're like, okay, if they're not running away and they're at home, great. But yeah, I think just like figuring out like what resources you have and making sure like you're using them like to the most of your ability. So if you have caddy waivers, like, you know, let's get that going. You don't have to pay for therapy, and, you know, there's like the state will pay for therapy. I can bill too through the school. But yeah, just knowing like what resources you have and just like the sooner the better. So like early intervention is key. And then, yeah. And then I know a lot of parents who like have kids with like behaviors, they're like, I don't know what to do. They're kind of like stuck and they're kind of like on survival mode. So like, I totally get that. But just continuing to like ask questions, finding support through, you know, the community and like our like family support group too, and then just like, you know, just keep asking questions and learning about it and just know like you're not the only one and we're here to support you guys. Like, I have cousins who are like, hey, what am I supposed to do? I'm like, hey, this is what you need to do. Like, if you need me to come to your house, I can do that. Can't come like every week, but like if you just need an, I've done that too, like if you just need an extra pair of eyes, like I could just do an informal, just go in and just like give you an idea. I've done that before with a family, but it's more like informal, like low key, like just tips and tricks to help you because like you're my friend or family.
Right.
But I think most people are really good at like going to their appointments, taking them to therapy, giving them like the equipment that they need. But it is very time consuming. It is a lot of info, especially with social media. There's just like a lot of information overload. But I think just, being curious and just learning, keep learning about your child because they are very smart. They are smarter than we think.
Yeah.
Even when they don't say anything.
And you're like, no, they're soaking it all up. They're just, it's overwhelming, I'm sure. You've been in more of those IEP meetings and have opportunities to explain what you do, and especially if you explain it in Hmong. So can you tell me then, because I'm here to learn as well, Green, how do you say in Hmong to the parents that OT is here to treat like sensory processing? You know, like what is, how do you say that? You had a little in Hmong,
I don't even say that. I just say like, oh, gubago the minua, like chin to king. So like calm their body. I kind of just keep it simple. I don't even go into sensory processing. Or sometimes I'd be like, oh yeah, tong dun da bimoy kya kong bonulu kanje or bonulu
bonulu
ear. Bunje
I mean it's included.
Yeah, but I think parents are pretty good about that. I think it's more behaviors that that I feel like they, I always feel not just Hmong parents, but I like I have this Hmong parent at one of my schools. I'm not at that school anymore, but I always just felt sad like talking to her because she was like, oh shoot, like I already know he headbutts you and he runs away.
Yeah,
but I just felt sad because I'm like, hey, like, what does he do at home? And she was like, oh, like he goes on his iPad. I'm like, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
It's hard too, because it's like, it's hard too, because at school, it's also like some things that we see at school is also like what we see at home, what they see at home too, or sometimes it's different. But I think it's just hard, especially if you're a parent and you're like, ah, what do I do? Like, I know my child is like this. But I try to always give them, like, as I get to know the child more, I'm always like, oh, hey, you know, like, they did really good. Like, he didn't hurt me. It was awesome. He was able to, like, tell me that he likes this type of, like, preferred activity. So I think it's always good to see that change over time. And also, like, letting them know, like, hey, I see you. I hear you. You know, here are some tips and tricks. We're trying to get to know him more too. But I think what's hard is like having that conversation of like behaviors. It's like, oh shoot, like, no one wants to know that like their kid is hitting and or hurting staff members or other friends too. So I totally get that. I think it's just hard to, and I think at home when there's other kids too, like there's, you want to, like, you are also trying to survive at home, too, or, like, cook good dinner, or keep others safe, so.
And that's part of what you do, right? It's recognizing the behaviors and how do we replace those behaviors with more desirable behaviors, which I feel like, am I talking to, like, I'm talking ABA not to you, but you guys use a lot of ABA in your therapy, so.
We do.
Great, yeah.
So we do.
Green, you bring up a really good point about like Hmong parents. Honestly, like you said, it's not even Hmong parents, it's all parents. I feel like there's a threshold at which point and they're like, yes, this, he pulled our hair yesterday, he climbed everywhere, we did it for about 3 hours, and then he finally went to sleep. And we're like, that's okay, I need that data. I need that information so I can look at our plan and we can tweak it. I can give you, like you said, tips and tricks. But until you, as a parent, can be comfortable in sharing that information with your team, right, whether it's your OT or your speech path or your BCBA, we don't know what's going on at home, right? So we often see parents who kind of underreport or sometimes overreport, right? They might say it's like this, but then at school or in the clinic session, we're like, we don't see any of that. Not saying that it's not true. It's just that that client, right, that kiddo, they may they may act differently in different environments, but especially when it comes to like self-injurious behaviors or aggression towards others, that's a difficult conversation to have. And definitely, I'm thank you for bringing that up, that that happens, right? And our, I hope that big among the families that you will feel comfortable in knowing that it's okay. You could have been your naughty, or you know, new initially you thought, oh, it's a bossa, but then it's like it's every day, 10 times a day, intensity, duration, you know, it's getting more and more. And like I said before, have these behaviors, but eventually they're going to get stronger, taller, bigger, faster. So let's utilize these therapies to help teach different behaviors, the behaviors that we do want to see, right? And that's part of what myself and Green, that's what we do on our daily. And so thank you for bringing that up, that these are conversations that please have them with your therapist, and please feel, know that they that is our job to help you, right? So because you're like, oh my gosh, but it's like, we need to know that so we can help you, so that's really important.
Yeah, but I feel, everyone's pretty, pretty receptive. And I think they kind of feel like they've already been through the route of like seeing people and specialists. So I feel like most parents are pretty good at like knowing what their child needs.
Mm-hmm.
So
and knowing where you come in to help them with that.
Yep. And keep on awesome. Being curious and learning. I feel like we're just changing so much that like the kids are changing too. And like technology and just everything. So yeah, thanks for having me on here and just keep learning and listening to the podcast. So yeah, you're not alone. Like we're all here to help. And I love seeing Hmong people and like Hmong kids. So yeah, it's good. It's definitely good to be culturally representative of that and know that like, hey, like I'm here to help your child too. You know, we're all a team.
Yes. You know, I had a parent on and she was saying how she was touring a ABA clinic. And when she found out that it wasn't even the clinician, it was an administrative staff in the front office. When Yamona immediately, she was like, sold, we're coming here. You know, seeing that Hmong individual on the other end, on the other side, and feeling that comfort. So I hope that if you're lucky enough to have Green as your OT, please, 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 she's doing an amazing job. And we just appreciate all the information you share, because the more information we put out there, hopefully the better off all of our Hmong kiddos and parents will be in knowing that, OT is so important. And there we have an ally in Ms. Green. So thank you so much for your time today, Green.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, Tia.
Yeah.